welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy. In this week, we're still playing with our toys. I'm still trying to learn how to do my small network, and Damien is playing with security. But you gave me a goal for this week.
Yes, I did. So I gave you a little project to work on, and the goal for this project was for you to put together a little network that gives you internet access, and for you to do that all on your own. And the idea here was for you to practice and see how that goes together and play around with the different things you have to do in order to get that to work. So you have a pfSense firewall that you installed, and then you plugged in your laptop and gave yourself internet access. So how did that go?
Actually, it went pretty well. I did give myself a little goal as well, because what I wanted to do is try to see, after we did last week's project, I wanted to see how much of it I retained it. So I wanted to see how I can put the whole thing together without asking you any questions, or at least minimal questions. So I went ahead, I got my the little computer to put the pfSense on. So I installed pfSense in it. And that part was fairly easy because we documented really well the installation of pfSense on our previous project. So I was able to breeze through that, you know, configure the LAN and the WAN. And I was pretty proud of myself because you remember us talking previously about configuring a Cisco switch. And whenever we did the interface and tried to give it an IP address, it asked you for the subnet mask. So on pfSense, it was a little bit different. And I remember that part, and I actually got it right because I put the IP address, and then instead of a subnet mask, it will ask you for the CIDR notation. So I was able to do that and realize that my subnetting is pretty strong, so I felt pretty good about that. After that, I went ahead and plugged it into my laptop, and then I did my testing, my connectivity testing. I pinged the gateway device, and I was able to see it. I pinged 8.8.8.8. I had internet just like you requested. I pinged google.com, so my DNS was working. So everything was pretty good. I felt pretty good about the whole project. But then again, you decided to kind of add some things to it for me to kind of grow on that.
So I had you add Wi-Fi to it. And I said, okay, I want to be able to bring my mobile devices in here, my phone, a tablet, and I want to connect to a wireless network. But I said, we can't have your wireless network on the same network as the LAN side.
Correct.
So you needed to create a whole new network. So how did that go?
That went well. I was able to subnet, you know, another subnet, I guess, for the wireless. And then I used my ASUS router and I configured it as an access point and, you know, plugged it in into the firewall and realized that I needed an interface because for me, I guess I kept thinking, wireless is internet. So it's plugged in, it's ready to go. Magically, I'm going to get all these IP addresses for whatever it is that I'm connecting. And that really wasn't the case. So you kind of explained to me that it's not really wireless, that it is the internet, that you needed to get your IP addresses. You need to have DHCP on some kind of a device. And I kept thinking, well, I have DHCP on the LAN side. And then I realized, okay, this is a different network. It's not going to see the LAN side. So where does my DHCP need to be configured? And at that time, I went in on the interface and realized I don't have an interface for the wireless network. So on pfSense, it has by default the LAN and the WAN. But if you want additional interfaces for the ports that the little computer that I use had, you have to add them. So I added that and it came up as Opt1. That's kind of how it added itself. And then I changed the name from Opt1 to Wi-Fi. And then I was able to configure, you know, the wireless and, the gateway device, and then do the DHCP. The problem I had was when I went to test my connectivity, I couldn't see my gateway device. And I kept thinking, wait a minute, I have it as the right network. I have everything correct, the CIDR notation, the DHCP. So do you want to tell us what it is that we found out? What you found out, actually, because I have no idea.
Right, right. So I even was thinking, okay, she did everything correctly. What's going on here? You had all of the interface configured properly, Wi-Fi, or the wireless network was all correct. The device was working fine. Your ASUS access point that you configured or the ASUS Wi-Fi router you configured as an access point on that network was functioning properly.
Right.
We were able to connect and everything was working the way it should be. Then we said, okay, why can't you ping the gateway device? In this case, that's the pfSense firewall. So I thought about that for a second and I thought, oh, this is a firewall. We're forgetting something here. Firewall rules. So the first thing we did was we went and checked the interface, and sure enough, there were no rules in there. So on a firewall, it's going to be default deny. And what that means is if you have no firewall rules at all on there, it's going to deny traffic going into the interface, in this case, the Wi-Fi interface that you added. So then we went ahead and took a look at the LAN interface and looked at the firewall rules there to figure out, okay, how are they configuring these rules to give that side of the network access to the internet? So we looked at that, and the rule was in there basically said allow or permit incoming traffic from anywhere to anywhere and allow that. And so we did the same thing on the Wi-Fi interface, allow traffic incoming from anywhere to anywhere, and then you were able to ping the gateway device and have access to the internet.
Well, and that was another thing is, like I said before, the LAN and the WAN by default, the interfaces were there, and they had default rules for the firewall. When you're adding additional interfaces into pfSense, you also have to add the rules as well. So that's why we ended up having to look at the LAN thing. You also, one of the things that I kind of wanted to point out, and I wanted to ask you, is you had me do the lease on the LAN for 8 days. But when it came to do the lease for the IP addresses on the wireless network, you had me do that, you know, less time. Why is that?
So, yeah, you're talking about the DHCP server lease.
Correct.
Or the amount of time that we allocate an IP address to a specific device. So, for example, I plug in my laptop on the LAN side. It's going to do a DHCP discover. It's going to get an IP address from the DHCP server. And for the LAN side, we specified 8 days. So I get to keep that address for 8 days. Now, there's some more going on with DHCP that we're going to learn about later on. But essentially, what's going to happen is I should have that IP address for about 8 days. On the Wi-Fi side, we decided to change that to 4 days.
Correct.
And the reason being is that when the DHCP server assigns an IP address and says, okay, you get this IP address for 4 days, 8 days, or whatever you want to configure that for, that address cannot be used by any other device until the lease has expired. So on an 8-day lease, I come in with my laptop, I plug into the network, and I get an address for 8 days. If I unplug my network connection and walk away and I don't come back ever, then what happens with that IP address? It's stuck in DHCP as being a used IP address for the 8 days. So it can't assign that to a new device until the lease has expired. And on the Wi-Fi side, you're going to have a lot of people going in and out of the network. And some are going to be there for a day. Some of them are going to be there for longer than that. But some are going to be there for less than that. So when you think about, okay, I have an 8-day lease, if that's what I want to have configured on this particular DHCP server, then when somebody comes in, even if they're only there for an hour or two and they walk away, that IP address is going to be stuck in the DHCP server for 8 days, and it can't be used until the lease has expired. So you could end up in a situation, if the network was really busy, where you run out of IP addresses to assign to new devices because they're all stuck in the pool of addresses that are already being used by somebody when technically they're not actually being used by anybody. The lease hasn't expired yet, so you can't use them.
No, that makes sense. You know, I'll be curious to see what the lease time is, like on a coffee shop when they have people coming in and out. We should check into that and see. Yeah, what it is. But one of the things I wanted to point out about the lease, on pfSense, they want it in seconds. So we actually had to figure out how many seconds in 8 days for the LAN one and how many seconds for 4 days on the wireless side of it. This is just something that if you're ever going to do something with pfSense, I thought you may want to know. So having said that, Damien and I are actually working on trying to come with a standard for Section 9 on how to do our projects, you know, like a list of things that whenever we do a project, you're going to have a list of things so we don't forget, you know, the basic things or something that we actually have to have in the network. And you kind of explained that a little bit better. But part of his homework that he gives me after I get done with a project is I have to write some things that I have learned after doing the project and some things that are fuzzy for me. So he knows where I'm at. He knows what kind of project to give me so I can actually learn a certain thing that I may not have real clear in my mind. So do you want to go through those with me right now?
Yeah, let's do that. So let's start with the things that you learned.
Right.
So first thing you have on your list is Wi-Fi is not internet.
That was big for me because when I was sitting in there in the last project, I had configured my ASUS router as a wireless router. So I sat in there thinking, wow, this is great. It gives out DHCP. You know, I'm pretty happy. It does what I'm supposed to be doing on that. And now all of a sudden you tell me my wireless has to be in a different network and you want me to configure it as an access point. So when I plugged it into the firewall, I'm thinking, okay, now I'm getting magically DHCP addresses like I was saying before. I didn't realize that, you know, the purpose of the device and how you wanted me to configure it to have it serve the network in a certain way, I needed to get DHCP from somewhere else. You know, it wasn't configured as a router, it was configured as an access point. So now I had to think in my head, you know, in my mind, I would have never made the connection of the wireless is not internet because most of the time I connect my phone, my tablet, whatever, to my wireless, I have internet. So to me, wireless was internet. Now that's clear to me that that's not what it is. It kind of solidified what DHCP is, how it needs to be configured, where do I need to be looking for it depending on how I'm configuring the device. So that was very helpful for me. Something I won't forget.
So the second thing you have here is access point versus wireless router.
And again, you know, that kind of goes with what I was talking about. When you configure a device as an access point versus when you configure it as a wireless router. As a wireless router, it has DHCP in it. Another thing is when we were working on that project last week and you were saying, we need to get a switch, and all of a sudden you stopped and you go, no, wait a minute. The ASUS router has switching capabilities. We'll just use the LAN ports on this. I would have never known that. So for me, trying to sit in there and realize I don't know enough about what my device can do and things are not really clear to me, you know, I should have known that. I should have known that I could use the ports. But in my mind, you know, I had to configure it a certain way. And, you know, of course, as a wireless router, to me, I plug in my things and I'm okay. But as an access point, total different duck. So that also kind of made it clear in my mind it was a valuable lesson for me.
So the third thing you have here is DHCP server configuration for the Wi-Fi network.
Correct. And that goes back to you always emphasizing to me. There are services, so there's a server, and there's a client relationship. You know, in this particular point, you know, I needed to have DHCP server, you know, to get those IP addresses on my access point. So that kind of brought it home as well. It was like I've always known that there is a server-client relationship, but this was a really clear example for me to say, okay, now I understand that part of it.
Right, right. So basically what we did here, or you did, is we said, okay, we need a new network for Wi-Fi because we want it separate from the LAN side. And then we said, okay, we're going to be using your ASUS Wi-Fi router as the access point. So you configured it as an access point. And then when you do that, there's no more fancy routing or DHCP server configuration within that.
Mm-hmm.
So that made it a bit difficult for you because now, again, what you're talking about here is, where's the DHCP server going to be? Oh, it's going to be on pfSense. Now we have to do some configuration on pfSense to set up the DHCP server so that we can have automatically assigned IP addresses for the clients.
Well, and also I made the assumption, well, I did it on the LAN side, you know, you should look at it because the confusion for me, and you know this, and we were going to discuss this during the confusing part of it, it's like, okay, both the wireless and the LAN are on the firewall. So I have DHCP there. So how does this thing know how to give the correct DHCP addresses to the correct network? That was really confusing in my head. So that was something that you actually also explained to me that I thought, okay, that was really cool. Because I wasn't making the connection about being different broadcast domains. And that's something that I also had to learn, you know. So that was really, really helpful for me. That kind of solidified the fact that, yeah, they are different broadcast domain. And then, like you were explaining, how did you explain it? Can you explain that a little bit better? Because I don't want to mess it up.
So when you have DHCP servers on the network, your client is going to be plugged into that network, whether that's Wi-Fi or wire, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing's going to happen. You're in a broadcast domain. And what that means is at layer 2 of the OSI, that's your broadcast domain, and that's your broadcast address for that particular network, if you will. Now, in the beginning, when you have DHCP Discover, you don't actually have it. It's a little tricky, though, because you don't have any IP address on your client. So the broadcast in this case is going to be that all Fs thing. And we'll talk about DHCP in another episode. We'll talk about how that works so we can kind of clarify that. Because even for me, I just use it. I don't really have to think too much about what's going on behind the scenes, because once you get the basic configuration, it just works. But here's kind of what happens. You plug in your device. It's going to do a DHCP server discovery. It's going to try to find out, okay, where is the DHCP server on this network? And then it's going to go through a process of requesting an address and getting that address. That happens at layer 2. And that's your broadcast to the network for that. When you're looking at different subnets, those are actually different broadcast domains, if you will.
So they would have a different broadcast address, correct?
Well, and I'm kind of blurring the lines here. So essentially what's happening is your broadcast domain in this case is a layer 2 type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can almost think of it as kind of like a VLAN situation where it's VLAN 1 versus VLAN 2.
So it's only sending the request on the VLAN side of things, or that broadcast domain itself. So.
Right, right. And in this case, it has to go to a MAC address, and that's where you get all that, essentially it's all Fs, and we'll talk about the details later on. But essentially, in this particular situation, when we talk about our pfSense firewall, it's layer 2 broadcast domains that are separate, and then we also have a situation here where your interface is layer 3. So we have a router in between the LAN side and the Wi-Fi side, so that when you have your DHCP server configuration on the LAN side, it's only listening on that LAN interface. And then when you have your broadcast on that network, the only interface that's paying attention to that is the LAN interface. And that DHCP server configuration on
the LAN side. Oh, I see, because
the
routers
side
will drop the broadcast.
Right,
okay, got
right.
It. Okay, see, that's why I think that's where I couldn't explain it. And that's what I figure is when I learn something and I understand it, I'm still not able to explain it, is that there's still some holes in there for me. So.
And I think I kind of confused a few things in there as I was trying to do my explanation. But you're going to see some of that when we get into the more the fancier or the larger network that we do with switching, and we have multiple VLANs. That's going to come into play.
Okay. Well, another thing I want to bring up, because we're going to put the diagram of my little project on the show notes. You also had me do a DMZ with a server. And I understand that that had to be also a different network. So I did my subnetting and I had that all ready to go. We didn't really go any further when it came to that, because I think that's something that you have in mind for a different project. So, but I wanted to mention it, because then when you see the network diagram and you see the DMZ, is that I don't want people to think, wow, they didn't even mention the DMZ. So it's going to be in there.
Yeah, we're going to cover that in another episode. So we did.
Now we go to the fuzzy ones.
Oh, so we're on the fuzzy now. So mm-hmm. The first thing for fuzzy is knowing how to connect the devices.
This is something that keeps coming up on every project that I do. And I don't really know that why it happens, because I know what an Ethernet cable looks like. I know what a port looks like. I know what the WAN port is. I know. And when I'm trying to connect more than one device, and I'm not talking about, you know, the laptop and the firewall, that was a no-brainer. Once that you put the router or the access point into play, it's like I had to hesitate and sit in there and like, how do I connect this? Because, you know, the thing that I want to know is it connected? Can it see, you know, the same things that are on the network, or are they connected properly to where I have all the cables right? That's still coming up and I don't know. I mean, it took me 45 minutes just to figure out what to plug into where. And it's frustrating for me, because I feel that I don't have a grasp about that. And I can, you know, you can read the book, and I don't think that you can really go from the book to really understanding how to plug the devices. Or maybe it's just me, I don't know. But it's one of the toughest things for me. It's tougher than doing the network diagram. It's tougher than subnetting. So that for me, it keeps coming up on every project.
So the second thing here you have, oh, I should mention this though. When you're talking about plugging in your devices, the only way that you're going to really learn that mm-hmm. is by doing it, because you're going to see, okay, I have a cable, it's got to go somewhere. The book is not going to help you with that, and some of the videos are not going to help you with that, because the part of the problem I have with some of the training that they do for the books, like Cisco or your NetPlus certification,
CompTIA.
Or, you know, the CompTIA stuff, or even, you know, you do some of your, like, Professor Messer. He's one that I will send people to all the time.
I love Professor Messer.
he is awesome. Still, how do you plug in the cables? He doesn't cover that.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about the theory and how certain things work, and he may talk about what you might type in, or we may have videos where they talk about typing things in, but plugging in the cables is not really talked about.
I think that goes in with you. Remember when I was trying to, you know, when we decided I was going to take the CCNA instead of, you know, we had to go back to Network Plus because of this. You know, I was getting ready. I wanted to have my CCNA, so we were going to do the two. I was going to do the two tests, the CCENT and then the CCNA. And one of the things that was really, that Damien actually realized, because I didn't know. I was just, you know, newbie, feet right in, let's go. It was that the book was assuming I knew a lot of the basics of networking, like plugging in my devices. You know what I'm saying? I think this is it. I think a lot of this is like, to them, they just think, okay, this is very basic and you should know this by now by the time you get this book. I don't know if that is why they do that. But I mean, I would really love to sit in there and see a video on how to put a network together and just the wiring itself, you know. So yeah, that's still really tough for me, and I have to work really hard on it.
Yeah, so the second thing you have in here is how to determine device configuration based on needs.
Right, and that goes back to where when I was trying to do the wireless network, and I did as the access point, I had to configure as an access point, and my assumption of, ooh, I got DHCP, because I always had it when I had it as a wireless router. So that really taught me that I really not only have to know my device well, you know, what layer of the OSI, what purpose does it serve in the network, but also what is going to be the main purpose for this device on a particular network. You know, because you have a lot of them, like the ASUS, that has multiple things that the device can do depending on how you configure it. And for me to, you know, to try to make the connection, oh, now I need to do the DHCP configuration on this particular interface. You know, those are things that are tough for me. I stumbled through that. I was like, why is it not working? Why can't I see my gateway device? What is wrong with this? You know, so.
Yeah. And again, that comes from practice. And, and you're going to get some of that from the studying. But when you start putting things together is when you start seeing, okay, this is what the device does and this is how I need to use it. So this is how I have to configure it. Mm-hmm. Again, that comes from practice. So last thing you have here is how to ask the right questions to come up with a plan.
Right. You know, and then that was last week when we worked on the last project and you had given me a list. I want you to configure this way. I want you to have, you know, DHCP. I want you to go and configure this device in a certain way. And you had a list of things for each device for me to do. You know, I know how you work. So in my mind, it's like, he's got it all figured out. As long as I get all of this stuff done, the network's going to be smooth. It's going to work. No problem. And it did. We didn't have any problems with that because I just followed everything, got it all done, and it was happy-go-lucky. When I did this project, the hardest thing for me was to have that organized list, like what the one you give me in my head, to sit down and say, okay, on this device, I need to do A, B, and C. On this device, I need to do A, B, and C and configure it this way. And I couldn't come up with a list. I didn't know what the right questions were for me to come up with the right answers, so I had everything covered in the network for it to function properly. That was a struggle for me. So I have a question for you when it comes to this. How do you, when you came up with your list, you know, how do you do that? I mean, like, how do you sit in there and go, okay, these are the things that I need to do? And that's when we got into that discussion of, I need to know the minimum things that I need to have on a network for it to be a basic network for it to function. And then you said, okay, you got to have internet. In some cases, you have to have DHCP.
Right.
You have to have DNS. You have to have IP addresses. And that was good. And even having said that, when I looked at this, it was still like, you know, I would have not known when I couldn't ping my, you know, I couldn't see my gateway device when I pinged it, that I was missing firewall, you know, the firewall rules. I didn't know that I wasn't going to get my DHCP addresses on it unless I went ahead and, you know, configure DHCP on that, because I was assuming that my, you know, I would have not known. So how do you sit in there if you don't have the experience like you do and try to come up with questions to make sure that when you do set up the network, you don't have something collapsing on one side or something missing and it's not functioning right?
So that's something we talked about. So we came up with a little list of things that we think is going to be sort of the IT needs. So we do have our Cisco network lifecycle. The problem with the Cisco network lifecycle is that they don't tell you or give you questions to ask. They give you kind of general information that you want to know, pulling information from existing devices, talking to management, getting business needs and all of that. But when it comes to building a brand new network or even modifying a network, what are some of the things you have to have in order for that network to function? And these are the IT needs. Without these, it's not going to work. You need IP addresses. You need a gateway device of some kind. So if in a larger network, you may have a router that takes you to another network. In our case, we're doing basic internet access. So we have our pfSense firewall. That's another gateway device that takes us out to the internet. And then you're going to need some sort of connectivity device, a switch, a wireless access point to connect all the devices and have them talk to each other, right? And then the last thing you're going to want to have is maybe DHCP. And we're talking about a DHCP server. And then you brought up something that we didn't have on our original list, which was DNS. You need access to some sort of DNS server. And that's both for the inside of the network and also maybe the outside of the network. So Google.com might be an example.
And see, this is what was really difficult for me, because when we did the design network, that was, you know, the business needs were easy. We need to print. Okay, we need a printer. We need to get to the internet. We need internet access. So that was good. But when it comes to the IT needs, that's a little more difficult to kind of sit there and say, what kind of device do I need to have for this network or this size network or when we expand, or, you know, how do I determine, like you were talking about bandwidth one time, if your device was going to be able to handle the specific bandwidth for those kind of things. So I'm really looking forward to continue to do the projects and get to the bigger networks. But my main goal right now is I need to get the little basic one to where I don't even have to think about it. You know, those basics, DNS, DHCP, and everything else that I need to be able to do that with my eyes closed and understand how to put my devices together. So then when we implement other things into the network, then it's not so blurry. And I'm not just, you know, running around trying to struggle to learn the basics when I should be focusing on what I'm going to do. But anyway, enough about me and my project. I really had a lot of fun and I enjoyed it. But you're working on the security part of things, because after all, that is really our main focus. So what are you working on?
Well, so these little networks that we're doing is kind of, as you talked about before, we're trying to come up with a standard, a basic network standard for Section 9 that we can use to put our projects together quickly so that we can start learning how to implement information security onto that particular network. So that's where we're at right now. And as we put these little networks together, my goal is to try to look at that and say, okay, how can we implement some security in here? And I'm looking at our security best practices. So we have our Center for Internet Security's top 5 security controls. And those are things I'm trying to figure out, okay, how can we apply that to this particular network? So one of the first things I'm looking at is a way to use something like Nmap to take care of the first one. The first one for the critical security controls is authorized and unauthorized devices. Now, I'm not going to get into too many details here, but I'm looking at a script that I found online. It was on GitHub, and it's a way to automate the Nmap scan, and it's going to do a baseline for the first scan, and then the second scan, it's going to use something called NDIF to compare the two scans. So what's different between scan 1 and scan 2? Let's put that in an email and send that out.
That was actually a pretty cool feature when you were kind of talking to me about it. So you do the first scan and then it doesn't send you an email, right? Not on the first one.
Not on the first
basic one. So we're going to have on our documentation a list of our authorized devices. And then you're going to do a basic scan and see if those authorized devices are there and what have you. And then when you run the second scan and do the NDIF thing, then it's going to look at the difference between the first one and the second one. If there is anything different, you get an email.
Correct.
What would the email have?
So the email, and I haven't actually seen this yet because I haven't gotten it to work properly yet, but once we have this implemented, the idea is let's say you scan 1 week, you wait a week, and you scan again. So you're going to do weekly scans.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, if there is any difference between the first scan and the second scan, it's going to put that information into an email and then send that to you. And you're going to see the difference. So it's going to show you the hosts and maybe some information about the hosts in terms of what ports are open. So you can do two things here. You can take a look at what's different in terms of authorized and unauthorized devices. You can also take a look at authorized and unauthorized services, depending on how you want to do that.
So you would have to configure the script that you found on GitHub to do that?
You want to make sure that the script is going to cover the things you want to have within your Nmap scan. So you can modify that and make it do what you want. So that's one thing I'm looking at. So the other things I think are going to be really important for us to take a look at is the firewall rules. We're going to take a look at Wireshark, and we're going to do some packet analysis and use tools like T-Shark and TCP dump. And the reason why I want to do that is because there are certain things within IT you can't actually see. So how does DHCP actually work? How do you see client-server communications? How does that initial broadcast function? So what we can do with packet analysis and things like T-Shark and TCP dump and Wireshark is we can see that actually happening. We capture the packets, and then we can analyze them and find all of the different stages of that process. And then we can also use that for security purposes as well, where we can look for traffic that maybe we should not have on the network. And the hard part about all of this is being able to implement that in an actual network. So if you go to training, like you do SANS training where they actually show you how to use some of these tools, they're very basic setups. So you have a lab where you're going to use something like HPing. You have a lab where you're going to use something like Metasploit. And they're very basic, and it's all pre-configured for you. You don't have to think about it. You just follow along in the book, ask questions from the instructor to make sure everything's working, and then you're done. You've learned something. What we're trying to do is do that kind of thing all on our own and put that in sort of a real-world scenario. How would we see this in the real network? So in your case, we came up with a network design where we have a LAN network, we have a Wi-Fi network, we have a DMZ network, and then we can add our tools to that, things like Nmap, and we can go from the LAN side and we can say, okay, let's scan the DMZ side and see what we get back. Let's put a device on the DMZ side that automatically scans what's on the DMZ so we can check it for unauthorized services, unauthorized devices, things that shouldn't be there. So those are the kinds of things that I'm looking at. And we will be going through the Center for Internet Security's top 5 security controls and running through that to see, okay, how are we really going to implement that? And I think that's going to be interesting process.
I think it'd be a really cool lab. I know that when we first got started, before we even did the podcast, Damien did a little lab for an Nmap video. Do you remember her Nmap video? And what was really cool, and I didn't know any of this, when you run, he ran an aggressive scan on one of the servers that we set up, and just to see what kind of information Nmap was actually putting out about the server that we had. And it put out a bunch of information, OS, the OS we were using, what ports were open, what services were out there. And then what he did is he modified a little bit and the things in the network, like we changed it, what was it, the SSH port to a different port, yeah, and see if you can see it. What else did you do?
So we also used the IP tables firewall to close some ports and block that kind of information. So when you do the Nmap scan after you make these changes, two things are going to happen. One, mm-hmm. it's going to be harder for Nmap to see what operating system you have because it can't access those closed ports anymore. It's blocked. And then it's not going to see SSH because SSH is on a port number that's not part of the 1,000 well-known ports that have listed in there for the default Nmap setup.
And that was the scan did that, the aggressive scan would scan, what is it, the first 1,000?
No, the 1,000 well-known ports.
Well-known ports. And that was kind of interesting for me because, not that I didn't make the connection back then, But I really understand the value of tweaking a couple of things to kind of tighten the security in there. And one of the things that we can do is we can put a link of the Nmap video in the show notes if anybody was interested to see that, we can do that.
So is there anything else?
Well, we should be putting a link of the Nmap video, the GitHub script that you found. You want to share that with everybody?
Yeah.
And also the network map for the project that I worked on. And, you know, if you want to try it yourself, that will be fine. And if anybody has any questions.
Yeah, if anybody has any questions, you can email us at section9.us. And then if you want to take a look at our show notes, that's at section9.us. Or no, the email is info@section9.us.
Right.
And then our show notes are at section9.us.
So thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening.